Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens.
Play ball.
From the home radio booth here at Salt River Fields in Scottsdale, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm Steve Berthew. Welcome to episode 13, and we have got a special show for you this week. We were hoping to be able to bring you a broadcaster's roundtable show during spring training, and today, well, we're coming to you a bit later in the week than usual. Everyone's schedule is getting pretty busy this month. There is much to do every day here, both here and elsewhere, in fact, in preparation for the season. But today the stars have aligned, and we mean stars, Gub. We have our broadcasters roundtable episode set to go. And for this episode 13, we have, as usual, our own Earl of Grantham, the longtime radio voice of the D-backs, the Gubner, Greg Schulte, who, as far as we know, is not associated with the American Double Imperial IPA Gubna Beer, which, as we found out this week, is distributed by Oscar Blues Brewery in Colorado. Gubna Beer.
Obviously a bestseller, because I've never heard of it.
Opening day toast.
According to the website beeradvocate.com, Gubna Beer given a rating score of 86, ranking it very good.
Out of 90?
I think it's out of 100.
That's pretty good. Like that.
Now, according to Beer Advocate, Gubna, which just is funny every time, succeeds by cranking up the complexity of the hops, and then it goes on a long list. It's got the formula, the malt, the rye, the fermentation, the whole thing. But it says the Gubna IPA will gently coax the citrus, rind, and grapefruit aroma while providing a rye, malt-induced, spicy yet round middle and a brisk, clean, bitter finish. Much like yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
For beer snobs out there, yeah.
So, Greg Schulte, not associated with Gubna Beer, G-U-B-N-A. It is not, of course, not the official beer of D-Backs Podcast, but we like the name.
Good.
Also here today, starring in our broadcast roundtable, episode 13, he has consumed a beverage or two in his day. Don't believe he's got one named after him quite yet. My broadcast partner on D-backs TV, the manager of the 2001 World Series champion, Arizona Diamondbacks, Bob Brenly, with us this week.
How you doing? By the way, the Gubna beer pairs very nicely with Limburger cheese.
and so does Greg Schulte, as a matter of fact.
Oh, my gosh.
Oddly enough. Also here, a man who ages not like a new IPA, more like a fine wine.
Ooh.
He's certainly got his own fruity bouquet. Ready for another season alongside the Gub on D-backs Radio. Back healthy and mobile once again. Now with you have two fake knees now, right, Tom Candiotti?
You just call me Steve Austin right now.
You are the six. Well, you're the $6 million man for many other reasons, because of all the, you know, it costs a lot of money to get you to do these games, and we're happy to have you here doing this for free on D-backs Podcast.
I tell you, it's great to be here, and I will partake in a Gubna beer sometime.
We have to find
a
way.
Yeah, we got to order.
Yeah,
that.
We got to. If you're wondering, you can Google it. G-U-B-N-A, Gubna, a new IPA that apparently is brewed in Colorado.
Wait a minute. Let's back up. We're doing this for free?
Well, I'm shocked Candiotti didn't say anything about it. I thought he'd be out the door already.
And finally, ably manning our controls, as always here on D-backs Podcast, a man who is really the heart and soul of the entire broadcast enterprise. He runs the radio side. He's a great contributor, we like to think, BB, on the TV side as well. Our producer, our engineer, our man about town, Leo Gilmartin, who does not have a beer named after him, but certainly should by now. Leo's waving. Leo, you realize there's no video component of this.
Yes, but due to technical difficulties, I speak, BB can't hear.
Yeah, so you,
that's fine.
So Leo is here, and we'll try and get Leo's thoughts when we can. This was the idea, guys. No, I still find this hard to believe, but no Hey Gubna segment.
Yay!
This week. No Sabermetric Smackdown. The hiatus continues.
Double yay!
We're just going to... We want to just have a four-man weave here, a discussion about what we've seen so far in camp, and as we look toward the season. We've had two or three weeks of workouts. We've had about 2 weeks of games, spring training games. So we're getting a decent sample size here in terms of sort of formulating some thoughts about players, strategies, lineups, that kind of thing for the 2015 D-backs. Let's start with the latest Diamondbacks news, though. We did have a couple of news items. First of all, BB, Josh Kohlminter. If you were the manager, and you'd probably hear that once or twice over the course of the year, it seems like Josh Kohlminter makes the most sense for opening day.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, I think he's earned it. He's been a good soldier for the organization. He's done whatever they've asked him to do, and he's done it very well. He had some success last season as a starting pitcher, and you know, there's not another logical candidate. That doesn't take away from Josh taking the opening day start, but you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. He might not throw 95. He might not have a snapdragon slider, but he knows how to get guys out, and I think the team responds very well when he's on the mound. They play good behind him, and he seems to rally the troops. So, you know, by process of elimination, you look at the other possible candidates, and Josh seems to make the most sense to me.
Candy, what do you think?
Well, I think every time Josh Kohlminter takes the mound, and we all said this last year, is that you pretty much knew what you're going to get. You're going to get a good performance, someone that's going to keep the team in the game and give your team a chance to win. And does he do it real flashy? No, but that's why I like him so much, is because, you know, he's kind of cut out of a different mold. You know, over-the-top delivery. You know, he's basically a two-pitch pitcher. He does have the occasional curveball that we'd like to see him throw a little bit more at times. And the one game we saw him pitch here, he threw a couple really good ones. So hopefully that's an indication. But he's just so different, and he gives everyone such a different look that I think that, you know, he can kind of throw a team in the knots sometimes just because he's just so unorthodox.
Gubb, you've done every opening day. What do you think about Josh Kohlminter?
Probably the least known of the opening day starters for the Diamondbacks in all those years when they had Randy Johnson. Their first ever start, he was Andy Bennis. But, you know, I agree with the pitchers that they have on the staff right now. He's the guy that's most deserving. And I like it. Every time Josh goes out there, you feel like you got a chance to win a ball game. And who knows, if he beats Bumgarner in that first ball game, maybe that kind of sends a message.
And I think it sort of personifies, guys, this Diamondback team. And Dave Stewart said on this show, in fact, you know, other teams won't see us coming. People, it seems, Candy, still don't see Josh Kohlminter coming. They still undervalue what he does out there as a big league pitcher.
And that's going to happen every time there's a pitcher that doesn't have the A stuff out there. You're going to say, well, you know, he's going to run into this or that. Then all of a sudden, you know, you get guys that just carve people up. And it's Josh could be one of those guys. He'll throw hitters into a slump because his stuff is just so weird. You know, over the top like that, the way that changeup fades, you know, that big 12-6 curveball that just kind of rolls up there. But, you know, what, all of a sudden when it's over and done, he's probably only walked maybe one guy or two guys. He's probably got 5 or 6 or 7 strikeouts, and he's probably gone 7-plus innings and given up 2 runs. So if you didn't know his stuff, you would think that this might be Randy Johnson out there, you know, if you just didn't know. So he's one of those guys at the end of the season, you look down, you go, wow, look at this guy. You know, look at his innings. Look at his, what do you have, 28 starts last year? Yep. I think he had a little bit in the bullpen before that, but every single game, it seemed like he gave this team a really good chance to win.
Okay, let me ask you, you had an opening day starter too?
I think I had 4 of them.
Okay, the responsibility of that, but just the excitement about being the opening day starter.
Yeah, it's stressful. You know, when you first get named the opening day starter, especially early in spring like this, you know that the organization is counting on you, and so it kind of raises the stress level a little bit. But the good thing about it, you start focusing on that team. He's going to be focusing on the Giants right now, and you know, whatever, he's going to be watching that team, you know, watching who's swinging the bat well in spring and all that stuff. But it is a special day, and it's nerve-wracking, you know, but once you get out there between the lines and stuff, you know, a lot of that just kind of leaves and it goes to just kind of executing your pitches. But this is opening day is fun. I never had the chance to pitch in a World Series or anything like that, only the playoffs. And that's like the closest thing I can relate it to is, you know, when I started the ALCS for Toronto in 91, opening day starts were pretty close to that. Not quite like it, but pretty close.
BB, there's a sense that Josh has earned this. How much, as a manager, when picking an opening day starter, sometimes the choice is obvious, like Don Mattingly's not thinking twice about who his guy is, but how much does resume and accomplishment and equity matter in making this type of decision?
Well, I imagine that's a subjective thing from manager to manager. I've always felt, like I said earlier, a guy earns it, you know, by your performance the season before or seasons before, by your performance in spring training, the way you go about your business. Are you a team leader? Are you a guy that the rest of the pitching staff looks up to in that clubhouse? And I think for all those reasons, once again, Josh is the right guy. We mentioned Ron Santo's name before we went on the air here, and Ron used to have a term about guys like Josh Colemanter. He's a comfortable caller. You see pitches you think you should hit, and you look up at the end of the day, and you're 0 for 4, you know, and you go home and you say, geez, how did he get me out? Well, Josh, you know, he works vertically in that strike zone, a lot of high fastballs, a lot of changeups and curveballs in the dirt. He just has that ability to make more out of his stuff than is really there. And that's, I guess, the art of pitching, you know. Move the ball around, keep it off the barrel of the bat. And, you know, once again, I think Josh is a leader of this pitching staff, and I think the rest of the guys look up to him, and I think he's going to do a great job.
Yeah, he knows what he has to do to succeed. You know, he's comfortable in his own skin. He's comfortable with his stuff. He's not out there trying to throw the ball 90 miles an hour, although we've seen him touch that once in a while. But whether one day he'll come out there and throw 84, that's what he's got that day. One day it might be 87, 88, but he's comfortable in what he does to try to get hitters out, and he knows he can be successful that way.
Well, along the lines of the camp news here, barring an injury or a trade, I'm sure Tuffy Gozuich will be the opening day catcher. We know Oscar Hernandez, the Rule 5 pick, who's looked so promising here, will not be. We just learned this Wednesday, in fact. Oscar suffered a fractured hamate bone in his left hand. He is having surgery, in fact, as we speak right now. We're taping this Thursday morning. A quick rehab. It's not a 3 or 4 month thing. It's 6 weeks. And that means he'll probably open the year on the DL and then go on a minor league rehab assignment. Guys, I think this is a blessing for a number of reasons. The hamate bone, from what I understand, BB, and you probably know a lot about this, it's almost like an appendix. Instead of, you know, letting it heal or fixing it, you just take it out. And then you're good, right?
Yeah, it was kind of the injury du jour a few years ago. It seemed like somebody in every camp was going down with that hook of the hamate bone surgery. But I would tend to agree with you. I think this is kind of a blessing in disguise. I mean, there's no question the organization likes Oscar Hernandez. I think from what we've seen in limited time here this spring, there's a lot to like about this guy. But he's young. He hasn't been above A ball. And since he is a Rule 5 draft pick, they would have had to keep him on the big league roster, which could have created some issues since you'd like to believe Tuffy's going to be the everyday guy. But if he needs a rest from time to time or there's a matchup you don't like, are you comfortable sending an A ball catcher out there to catch a big league game? I think maybe this will work out to his advantage, especially the rehab part, going down, playing some minor league games, getting his feet back underneath him again. And at that time when they're ready to bring him off the disabled list and off of his rehabilitation assignment, they're going to have to make a decision then because, you know, we're not going to make any assumptions as to who the backup is going to be. But, you know, Gerald Laird's a guy that's filled that position and filled it quite well throughout the course of his career. Peter O'Brien, another young guy. Offensively, you love the bat. Defensively, still a work in progress. But I think Oscar could really use this little bit of a kind of back up and take a deep breath. He was really grinding hard this spring, trying to open some eyes and make the ball club. So, you know, when the time comes after he finishes his rehab, there'll be some tough decisions to be made then. But I think this is going to make it a little bit of an easier decision for the organization breaking camp.
You're trying to figure out a way to keep him on the big league roster for the entire season. And it seems like, Handy, you buy yourself 2 months here where you, in a sense, don't have to worry about that issue.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it gives you a chance, you know, to have, like, to take a look at all the other catchers. How many catchers do they bring in? Eight?
Eight, yeah.
Something like that. But, you know, even in my career, it seemed like I always was throwing to the backup catcher. You know, whether it was Tom Prince or Carlos Hernandez or Joel Skinner or, you know, whoever it was. And to me, those guys were awesome because they only got the chance to play once, maybe twice a week. And when they came in to catch that day, maybe they didn't look forward to catching me, but they brought their A game. I mean, they were ready to go. They were fired up. They were fired up, you know, getting the game plan ready. They were fired up for their 3 or 4 at-bats that they might get. They were fired up to throw a guy out. I love pitching to the backup catchers. You know, a lot of times Greg Maddux was like that too. Usually Maddux had his own catcher, and he usually liked the backup guy. I know he didn't like throwing to Javi Lopez, I think, for
Eddie
a while.
Perez. Well, Lester loved David Ross in Boston, so the Cubs, they got Lester. They had to go get David Ross.
Yeah, and so the backup catcher really – you know, it's nice because he's probably going to get one start a week. And that one time, you know, whether whatever pitcher that is or if it's just going to be on a Sunday or maybe a day game after a night game, whatever it is, you know, it's, you know, he knows his job that time is to go out there and do it defensively, do it, you know, by game calling, do it back there. If you get something offensively, great. And that's why I think the backup should always be a really good defensive catcher.
It's a very tricky situation here, Gubb, trying to navigate this Rule 5 deal where he's got to be on the team. And they love what they've seen so far. There's a ton of talent there. He's only 21 years old. But now they don't, you know, they really don't have to worry about that for a couple of months.
Yeah, and that's beneficial to them. You mentioned Laird and you mentioned O'Brien, another guy that's getting work. I don't think I've seen him work behind the plate yet, but he's looking at, you know, are there other infield spots, can play the outfielder as the non-roster Jordan Pacheco,
yeah,
who was with the ball club after they picked him up from Colorado last year. I guess he could possibly win some kind of a role as utility guy. He could play the infield, could play the outfield, and be that third catcher if needed. Now, I don't know if they'll get to that. They've got a lot of tough decisions to make. Is Tomas the third baseman? Is he in the outfield? You know, who's the backup catcher? But the injury to Hernandez, like the guys have said, kind of a blessing in disguise because now, as you said, 2 months where they don't have to contemplate, you know, did we make the right decision or did we not? Now they've got some time to, you know, kind of let itself weed itself out.
And there was a report, by the way, in the Toronto paper this week where Deanna Navarro, the Blue Jays catcher. Well, yeah, he did, in fact. They were asking him about, you know, his situation because they spent all the money on Russell Martin. And somebody asked Deanna Navarro, you know, how are you doing here with being now the backup guy? He had a good year last year. And he said, well, my agent tells me that the Diamondbacks are still interested.
Yeah.
I think he mentioned the Tigers as well.
We had him for like 24 hours at one time. Got him from the Yankees in a deal and then shipped him to L.A., I think, as part of the Sean Green deal.
Did BB, what about the idea that you don't want to rush Peter O'Brien here because he's certainly in the mix and he's looked very promising, it seems like, defensively. Seems like he's made a lot of strides. Or do you think that you need to bring in another veteran, maybe to compete with Gerald Laird, put Hernandez on the DL, put Peter O'Brien in the minors, and then go forward with Tuffy and or Laird and Navarro or whoever else?
Well, I think obviously we're not in that clubhouse. We don't know Peter O'Brien the way the staff does and the way his teammates do. You know, he's played in advanced competition, you know, pretty much his whole career. He's played up. He's played in the Arizona Fall League. He's played in some very pressure-packed situations for a minor league guy. But you'd really have to take a good read on a guy and see if not only physically but mentally is he ready to handle the rigors of catching at the major league level. That's something I think only Chip and his staff and Tony La Russa and those guys can answer. They're around him every day. They know him a lot better than we do, but certainly you run the risk if a guy isn't ready and you think he is and you bring him to the major leagues and he gets overwhelmed and swamped and starts to lose confidence and eventually you'll have to send him back to the minor leagues for some more seasoning, and that can be a crushing blow, especially for a guy that most people think is a can't-miss offensive prospect. So, you know, you'd like to be very careful with him, but certainly the guys that are around him every day know a lot better than we do how he would handle that.
We can go back to your managerial days here in Arizona. There was a young pitcher who was dynamite in the spring, and you had him on your opening day staff, Corey Daigle. I mean, he forced his way onto the staff, remember that? Yeah. And decisions sometimes, I mean, they can really be tough, but in a catcher who's handling a staff like that, you wonder if he might even go back to Double-A and work with the big trio down there if that's where they start the year.
Yeah, people forget that when he was with the Yankees in Trenton, he was not catching full-time. They had him at first and third and the outfield. He was catching a quarter of the time. Then he comes to the Diamondbacks, plays four games, fouls the pitch off his shin, and he's done for the year.
So he basically missed August and September.
Right, and he hasn't essentially caught at all for the Diamondbacks other than the Arizona Fall League and here in camp. Now, he's been working ever since the first week of July with Glenn first week of January, I should say, with Glenn Sherlock. So he's had now, January, February, March, 2.5 months of almost daily workouts as a catcher with the Diamondbacks on top of the Fall League. But, you know, a month or two in the Diamondback system as the everyday, and that's the key word, Candy, everyday catcher, maybe that might really pay off for Peter O'Brien and the organization as well.
Well, I think anytime someone hasn't had a lot of reps, the best thing to do is to get some reps. Go down there and catch, because things happen. But you know, going back to what BB said, you know, we're looking from, you know, we're watching the games a little bit. This coaching staff is with this guy every day. They're watching how he blocks balls. They're watching his footwork. They're watching his throws. They're watching a number of things. They see how he handles himself, you know, in the pitcher-catcher meetings. I mean, there's a lot that goes on. They're seeing how he handles himself, you know, when they're doing their infield drills and stuff like that. So there's a lot more than just going out and catching the game that, you know, we aren't really privy to. But, you know, Tony La Russa and Chip Hale and Glenn Sherlock and all the coaches are out there, and they're evaluating. They're all getting their input. They're seeing, you know, what they think, and they'll ultimately make that decision whether he is, you know, they think he can be a backup, or if they think that, you know, it's something more than that. So, you know, that's the beauty of spring. You know, he's going to get his chance to have some reps, and they'll make that determination probably in a couple more weeks.
BB, Peter caught the game we did on TV Sunday. I know it's very small sample size, but you're the only one of us here that's been a major league catcher. What have you seen so far in a very limited amount of time?
Well, first of all, he's a big guy. I didn't realize he was that big. I mean, I guess that's kind of the trend now to go to those big strapping catchers behind the plate. But for a big guy, I thought he moved pretty well. At times, his hands seemed just a little bit stiff, but we have to keep in mind he's catching a lot of guys he hasn't seen much of before, still trying to learn the staff. But I think there's a lot there to work with. I think there's a lot of potential behind the plate. And, you know, when you've got the track record offensively that he's brought to the Diamondbacks, occasionally you're willing to overlook stiff hands a little bit, or maybe a ball or two will get through the wickets all the way to the backstop. But then, you know, he hits a three-run bomb and all is forgiven. I think at least going in, that's kind of the impression that most people have about Peter O'Brien. You're going to have to take some deficiencies behind the plate as he works on them with Glenn Sherlock. But ideally, he'll make more than make up for it with his offense.
I guarantee you, he's better right now than Mike Piazza was when he was a starting catcher of the Dodgers.
Let me ask you this. Every time you come on the show, you kill Mike Piazza.
No.
You're killing him.
Me and Mike are buddies.
You're killing him.
No, I'm just analyzing the situation for him.
That's why you're here.
Because it's very similar in a way, because he's such an offensive guy.
Right.
But, you know, when you have that kind of offense, you know, like a Piazza, you know, you make up for a guy that really can't throw guys out, or it's going to be, you know, scuffle a little bit behind the plate. And O'Brien kind of reminds me a little bit of that.
Well, I'm not trying to be snarky here, but Peter O'Brien, by all accounts, in conversations I've had with him, and Glenn Sherlock tells me this all the time, this kid wants to catch. Did Piazza catch because he needed to play somewhere so he could hit, or did he really want to catch?
I think what was Tommy Lasorda, his
uncle or godfather?
Godfather. Yeah, yeah. Godfather told him, here's a catcher's mitt, go catch and you can make the team. Because I don't think he caught a whole lot. You know, I don't think he was even that good of a hitter early on. But
did he look at it as kind of a necessary evil to get to hit four times a game? All right, I got to play somewhere. Because O'Brien really seems to want to be a catcher.
Yeah, and I think Mike tried to do that for a little bit, but you know, it just wasn't there for him. You know, his throwing wasn't that good. You know, he was so more interested in, you know, in what he can do offensively. And what he could do offensively was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and he might give up a run a game or even more, but, you know, he might drive in, might hit that big three-run bomb that he did many, many, many times and to win baseball games. So kind of a little bit interesting on, you know, the dynamics of it. Dodger Stadium was definitely a pitcher's park. You don't score a lot of runs there, so he wanted to get some offense. But the hard thing is you get a close game late in the game, guys are going to steal, you know, those one-run games. You know, Arizona, you got a lot better chance of scoring a lot of runs. And so, you know, when you put another bat in the lineup like that, you're going, this is pretty tasty.
Well, that's the latest on the catching situation. We mentioned Josh Colemanter on opening day. Josh is throwing, actually, right now in a B game, just across from where we are here. We're in the stadium at Salt River Fields. Josh is on a backfield throwing a B game. BB, let's ask you about the B game, because this is a term we throw around a lot, but some fans may not be familiar with it. What's the idea, the purpose of a B game? How do you organize one, and what happens?
Well, as you can imagine, with so many guys in camp, it's tough to get at-bats for everybody that needs at-bats. It's tough to get innings for the pitchers that need to get out there and show what they can do. So, at least in my experience down in Tucson, we shared the field with the White Sox, and if we showed up in the morning and Chuck Kniffin or Bob Welch or Dwayne Murphy, one of my coaches, came and said, hey, you know, we got these guys. They need to get some at-bats. They haven't played in 3 days. I would call Ozzie over in his office in the other clubhouse and say, hey, can you throw nine guys together? We need four innings of a B game. And Ozzie was always very cooperative. Rarely are B games scheduled, but they can pop up the day before or the day of, and you just throw them out there and let them get their work in. Eyes on them. Coaches will be over there watching. Usually it's played early in the morning. It's one of those days you put your uniform on, stretch, play catch, and go get them.
Candy, you said you like B-games.
I had one of the funniest stories of B-games. Remember Mike Blowers?
Sure.
Mariners.
I was on the Oakland A's, and Mike Blowers at that time was with the A's. I think this is 98, I think. And so him and Kevin Mitchell, a couple guys, had to go over and play an early game, B-game against the Cubs. You know, get some ABs in, whatever. So he comes back for our regular game that starts at 1 o'clock, and they're going, are you kidding me? We faced some guy that was throwing 120 miles an hour. Well, this guy ended up being Kerry Wood. Yeah, he said, you're going to remember this guy. And so sometimes those B games can you know, you think you're going to go over there and get yourself a few knocks and whatever. Doesn't work that way. Yeah, those guys bring it down there.
And you're talking about 10:30 in the morning facing Kerry Wood.
That's right.
Right? That can't be any fun.
In front of coaches and other players, because they don't sell tickets to B games.
But, you know, you brought it up, the B game, and there are two scheduled for the Diamondbacks. This one, they've got another one. That shows you all of the pitchers they've got in camp, the position players, the catchers they're trying to get ABs for that they can't. In the regular games, that shows you how many decisions this club's got to make to get down to a 25-man roster.
Oh, yeah. And talking about B games, in my brief time with the Toronto Blue Jays, they were very adamant about keeping Jimmy Key away from opponents that he was going to face during the regular season. And as it evolved, I became Jimmy Key's valet catcher in spring training. We'd get to the ballpark in the morning, put our uniforms on, jump in Jimmy Key's truck, and drive over to Clearwater or wherever. I'd catch four or five innings of Jimmy Key work, go back to the ballpark, and then sit and watch the game in the afternoon. But I kind of liked it, to tell you the truth. I enjoyed it. I knew I was going to get to catch five innings every day, so it was great.
Well, another reason I brought up the B game was because Josh Colemanter is throwing to get some innings in. And most importantly, Chris Owings is playing.
That's good.
And we know Chris is coming back from the very serious shoulder injury he had and surgery. Faced live hitting for the first time last week, is playing in the game for the first time today, the B game. And so it looks like Chris Owings, in talking about figuring out a way to get all these guys at bats and how do the pieces fit and who goes where, it gets, in a sense, more complicated now because Chris Owings, it seems like, is close to coming back and playing in a spring training game. If all goes well today, we should see CO out there hopefully sometime next week. So now things, Gub, are even more complicated out there, but for good reason.
And I've talked to him. He said he feels good. But, you know, saying you feel good and maybe having to do something where that shoulder really comes into play, you know, that's a whole different story. When he went out, it looked like it was going to be a 4 or 5 week thing. It ended up being an entire season thing. So he missed a ton of at bats. But I liked what I saw. Chris Owings at shortstop. Candy and I often referred to him as a Craig Biggio type player.
Yep.
And if second base ends up being his position in the long run somewhere down the road, so be it. But we really liked what we saw out of Owings in the first few months, Candy.
Yeah, I'm a big Chris Owings fan, as you guys know. I love the way he played shortstop. You know, you could put him anywhere out there, whether second base too. In fact, I think it was Dave McKay that told you he looks like he might be even better, better suited for second base. But I love the way he played shortstop. I thought he was steady. I thought he was accurate. I thought you know, he was sure-handed. You know, a lot of traits out there that I really liked, and I liked the way he hit. You know, he hit the ball, he squared it up, he didn't strike out a lot. He can hit to all fields. Kind of guys, they bug you as a pitcher. And so, I mean, I really enjoyed watching him play, and it was really unfortunate, you know, when he did go out.
Yeah, I remember trying to slide headfirst into home on going for the inside the park home run late July against the Giants, and when you look at his numbers, Bob, from last year, you kind of have to throw out the second half because, as we later came to find out, he was playing the whole second half of the season with a labrum tear. I mean, that really had to impact the numbers.
Oh, I would think so. I mean, you know, obviously playing a very valuable position where you have to cover a lot of ground out there. You got to throw your body on the ground quite often. You got plays at second base. More contact than you would expect for a guy like Chris Owings. But the thing I liked about him was he's got a little edge to him. You know, he's got a little, you're either with me or I'm going to fight you, you know. And I like that. There wasn't enough of that on this team last year. As we saw going all the way back to the Dodger brawl the year before, it seemed like some of that Diamondbacks edge was taken away. And for me, Chris Owings is a guy that can bring some of that back.
So we'll see where CO ends up.
I see two other guys like that, too. I see Tuffy, and I see Ender Nciardi, who's got an edge. So, you know, you do like that. They're young kids, but, you know, they play. They want to beat you any way they can. Yep.
Mentioning the middle infield, it kind of segues nicely into the guy that I think Gubb has been, I don't know if I want to use the word surprise, but I think the star of camp so far, and that's Brandon Drury. For me, he's been the guy that he's the headline guy. The guy that stood out the most to me is Brandon Drury. What do you think?
Well, I sure like what I see of him playing second base, and I like the pop. He's got a great body. I mean, he kind of stands tall in that batter's box, but, you know, he put one out yesterday in the ball game, and he's got some pop in his bat. If you look at that trade now with Atlanta, Upton is with San Diego. The Diamondbacks have still got Ahmed. They've still got Drury, and they've still got Delgado as part of that deal.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, it looks like Drury might be the best of the lot coming over. So he's still very young. They got him at a very young age. They looked at him at third baseman, but if it's Lamb or if it's Tomas, whomever, he sure looks like he could handle second base to me on an everyday basis.
Drury is only 22. Remember, he played almost all of last year in A-ball at Visalia, played about 20 games or so at AA Mobile at the end of the year, then played in the Fall League, where for the first time, really, he played a lot of second base. Because, Candy, it seems like he's a guy that they have identified as a major leaguer, a guy that has the potential to be a stud here. You want to figure out a way to get him in here. So it seems like you're thinking ahead, okay, let's get him at second base, and then maybe that's a possibility a year or two from now. But it looks like maybe we even move that timetable up.
Well, he certainly has opened some eyes in this spring, the way he's been hitting the ball. What's he hitting, like 455 or something like that, I read? But, you know, when you look at him and this game today, I mean, every team seems like they're not really looking for the pitching so much. They're looking for bats.
Yep.
You're looking for offense. And what he's shown the front office and the coaches so far is that he can handle it right now. Now, we'll see. It's early in spring. Guys don't have real crisp breaking balls, and, you know, they don't have their A stuff going right now.
Sure.
But, you know, you'll see how it kind of develops. But you know that you've got a guy that's got a lot of potential down there that he could handle it. You can call him up. There's injuries like what happened last year to the Diamondbacks. You won't hesitate to call him up.
Yeah, BB, I remember talking to Bob Gebhardt about this, and Gebby said that kid's a player because he had just been to see him. He moves pretty well, it seems like, defensively at second base for a big – he's a big kid, 6'1", about 200, very well built, but he moves around pretty good.
Yeah, he made a great play on Sunday, went up the middle and made a nice diving stop, threw from his knees to get the out at first base. A surprising range for a guy his size at second base. Last Sunday I commented that physically he reminds you a little of Jeff Kent at second base, you know, kind of a bigger, stronger-bodied guy at second, whereas usually those are little wiry guys that can turn a double play and make the flashy defensive play. But he's a little bit of a different mold, and, boy, you love the pop in the bat. I mean, you hear it said all the time about the ball makes a different noise coming off some guys' bats. Well, so far it's made a lot of noise coming off his bat this spring.
He might wind up being the best player in that Justin Upton deal,
of
all of them. That gets us to third, guys. Yasmani Tomas. How's it going?
I got some time yet to look at it. We've seen games where he hasn't gotten a chance. We've seen one ball game where he had five chances. Make that six chances. Five outs on it. He has not made some routine plays. He's made some nice stops. A lot of low throws. To me, Lamb's a better defender. He's a left-handed hitter. You've still got a little time to wait it out, but sooner or later you have to make that decision. Is he going to be our guy there? Because it's going to affect the rest of the roster.
Yeah, for me, he scares me at third base right now. I mean, there is room for improvement, and I know he's working very hard and trying to improve his footwork and soften his hands up a little bit. I've seen a lot of throws in the dirt across the diamond. Fortunately, his first baseman's picked him up quite a bit over there. You know, we talked about the offense being down. Everybody's looking to score runs. And for me, that means your defense has to be even better than it's ever been. You cannot afford to give up unearned runs. And with Mark Trumbo and some of the issues he has out in right field, and if you run Tomas out there at third base, you're going to have a few positions out there where you're not as good as you should be defensively. So, you know, for me, I think he probably would be much more comfortable out in left field, but we'll see what happens the rest of the way here.
BB, what about the idea? We've heard the Diamondbacks say this. We've heard a lot of scouts say this, you know, quote-unquote neutral observers, that you don't need him to be Brooks Robinson down there. They just need him to make the plays he's supposed to make, get to, you know, make the plays on things that are hit to him to get the bat in there, and that'll be enough defense. Is that enough defense for you?
Well, You know, it depends on how much offense he brings. You know, we were talking about with Peter O'Brien earlier. You can overlook some defensive misgivings if you overcome it with your offense. I'd like to see him pull the ball once in a while. I know he's got great opposite field power. He's shown that down here this spring already, but I still haven't seen him turn on a good fastball yet. And, you know, once again, it's early. We get so caught up in this, and we want to name the team right away after the first couple days of spring training, but he's got time to improve. He's got time to get his timing and his rhythm down up there at the plate. But defensively, like I said, he scares me down there. One thing that scares me is the routine plays, it seems like, are the ones he has trouble with. I've seen him make some diving stops. I saw one where he dropped the ball on an exchange after a real nice backhanded stop. But a routine two-hopper waist high in the glove, and he either drops it or, you know, throws it in the dirt. His footwork's not quite as good as it should be. All things that can be improved upon, but you'd like to start seeing some improvement soon.
And, Candy, there's a lot on this kid's plate. New country, I mean, you know, trying to learn a relatively new position.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot to it. But, you know, again, we'll go back to what we're talking about with O'Brien. You know, these coaches are hitting him ground balls every single day. They're checking out his footwork. They're checking out his hands. They're checking out his arm. And they're all working with him. And they're going to be able to get a lot better evaluation there. You like to see him apply some of the good things he does, you know, on those backfields to the game. We saw a couple games where, you know, that mediocre play, the average play, the routine play, he didn't make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look at him, when he hits, you know, like BB said, I saw him hit an inside, a little bit low fastball yesterday and hit it up the middle trying to inside out it. I like to see him just clear out and just drill one once in a while that way or try to pull the ball once in a while because as a pitcher, you know, those scouting reports are going to get out. And at some point, he's going to have to make an adjustment there, and because they're just not going to let him hit the ball to right center, right field all the time.
Just get that bat head around on a fastball. It'd be nice to see.
Yeah, maybe work with Aaron Hill a little bit.
Yeah, he'll pull the ball.
Aaron Hill has no trouble pulling the ball.
Where does Aaron Hill fit in?
Second base right now.
He hasn't played a whole lot this spring, it seems like.
I mean, he's a vet. You know, he looks in great shape, number one.
Yeah, he does.
He's moving well, and I think – barring some kind of a deal, I think he's the opening day second baseman.
I would tend to agree with you, Governor. I mean, you know, the money they're paying him and his track record, you know, he had an off year last year, no question about it. But he's another guy that was probably playing hurt most of the year and just refused to tell anybody because that's the kind of guy he is. He's a team player, and he thought the team needed him, so he went out there and certainly was less than 100% most of the season. You'd like to see the kind of numbers he could put up if he's able to stay healthy, because if he returns to form, especially offensively, he can be a force in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, we hear that from fans a lot of time. Why don't you trade Trumbo to get better defensively? Why don't you trade Aaron Hill to move some money? Well, if you trade those guys, they're very capable of going and having – you know, Aaron Hill might hit 20 homers someplace. Trumbo might hit 40 home runs someplace other than here. And then you're kicking yourself. You want that to happen here. And it seems like both guys, Trumbo and Hill, are candidates, Gub, to have those comeback years here in Sedona Red.
And I think Hill's going to have a comeback year if he's in Sedona Red. You don't know how things play out in spring training. I mean, there might be another injury or two. Teams might be calling and say, hey, we really want this guy. We'll give you such and such. You know, general managers are on the phone daily. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think, speaking about Tomas, I think one reason why it's important to give him the opportunity to win that third base job is that because you want, for me, Ender Inciarte out there. Because we've seen just in a handful of spring training games so far, it's a reminder of how many different ways it seems like, one, he keeps getting better all the time, and more importantly, he impacts the game. It seems like Ender finds a way, Candy, to impact the game every time he's in there in different ways.
You know, I became an Inciarte fan last year, and it wasn't easy early on because you could, as a pitcher, you could knock the bat right out of that kid's hands.
Yep.
And he got better and better, and he worked hard. You know, I know it was a work in progress as a stealing bases, but how many hitting streaks did he have last year? He had a couple long ones.
Yeah, 118 gamer, another
eight straight games where he let off the game with a hit.
You know, so when you look at that, if Tomas, the importance of him being able to handle the third base role, you can get him in the lineup. You know, you could flip flop him and Pollock at the top, have him lead off maybe against a righty, or maybe have Pollock lead off against a lefty and have him second. But you got guys that with some pretty good on base and an. At least with Pollock, a little pop to go with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that sets up the middle of the order for him. You need those guys at the top of the order. So, you know, do you look at the lineup and do you think that the team is better with Inciarte in left field? or do you think they're better with Lamb at third base and then Tomas in left field? You know, so it just, and there's no guarantee Tomas can play left field. I haven't seen him play the outfield yet, but I'm sure that, you know, he's probably catching some fly balls out there. But, you know, there's a lot of options on this team, a lot of moving parts that that Chip Hale has and the front office has that they can tweak things a lot.
And speaking of options, I know they're paying Tomas a lot of money. But is it a crime if they send this guy down for a couple of months to, you know, adjust to a new country, wherever they want to play him at third base or the outfield? Get, you know, they did that with Puig a few years ago. He was probably the best player in spring training this spring he had. I mean, this guy was unbelievable.
Yeah, he had a sensational spring a couple of years ago.
And so, I don't think that's out of the question, is it, BB, that they send him down?
No, and I think there would be something to be gained from that if that's exactly what happens, you know. We talked about it on the air last Sunday. Cuban national team, that's good competition, but it's not the big leagues. You're not seeing the same quality of pitcher on a daily basis, the same quality of defense behind that pitcher, the scouting reports, the whole deal. You know, it's a little bit different when you're playing exhibition games for the Cuban national team as opposed to facing Clayton Kershaw or Zach Greinke down at Dodger Stadium, you know. And I think, you know, depending on what happens the rest of the way, and certainly there's a lot of things that could go either direction, but I don't think it's out of the question this guy might go down to the minor leagues, get some at-bats, get more defensive playing time, whether it's third base or left field, so he feels more comfortable defensively. And you know, the worst thing you want to happen is to bring a guy up to the big leagues, like we were talking about with Peter O'Brien and Oscar Hernandez. You don't want him to get overwhelmed at the major league level and start questioning whether they should be here or not.
And I think Jake Lamb, if he's given the chance to play every day in the big leagues, he struggled last August, adjusted, but September I thought we saw real progress. There's no reason to think, based on that and what we've seen here this spring, that Jake Lamb won't continue, like Ender did last year, to get better and better and better every month if he's playing every day in the big leagues. I saw him hit two home runs at HoHoCom the other day.
Against lefties.
Yeah, hit one into the bullpen off Barry Zito. That was a nice. And he made a play here yesterday at third base. It was absolutely sensational, Gub. You'd hate to see Jake Lamb sit or not get the opportunity to, because I think he's got a lot to give you.
Plus, he's a left-handed bat who can drive the ball and, you know, in a very right-handed heavy lineup for the D-backs.
Yeah, and he only played Double-A last year, really.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he had a tremendous year, really, in Double-A. And so when he did get to the big leagues, remember how low his hands were? And they moved his hands up to try to get a little shorter to the ball, I think.
A ton of strikeouts early.
And, you know, that's a big adjustment, not only getting to the big leagues, number one, but also then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, we got to change you around. So, you know, I think if he can relax a little bit, I like him at third base. I think he plays – you know, very well over there. I like his bat. I like his power. And I just like the energy that he brings.
And Governor brought up a good point, having that left-handed bat in a right-handed heavy lineup. You know, late in close games, opposing teams are going to have all their righties warming up in the bullpen to go after Goldie and Trumbo and Tomas, whoever might be in the lineup on that given day. Jake could cherry-pick some righties, you know, slide him in there between two of those guys and let him do some damage.
Hey, you talk about Chris Owings and maybe Brandon Drury and Jake Lamb, and it looks like, you know, Peter O'Brien, Oscar Hernandez, that infield is young and is set and in pretty good shape here moving forward. What about the pitchers? Let's throw it to Candy. You're the pitcher here. Who have you seen in spring that stood out to you?
Well, I think one of them was Daniel Hudson. That's probably the number one guy when we did the game and we saw his start. He looked so free and easy and the ball just flying out of his hand, like a little bit like we saw last year. But starting the game and being to that point, I don't know what they're going to give him. You know, there's always the plan, I know, but sometimes you deviate from it. He looked outstanding to me. You know, I saw last night watching D-backs on the TV, MLB channel. I watched the way Delgado threw. He threw outstanding. The best I've seen him throw in a long time, especially his breaking ball.
Struck out Trout, Pujols, and Freeze all in a row.
Yeah, and, you know, he's always had, you know, the fastball that was decent, a really good change, but he threw a lot of good breaking balls for me, too. I hadn't really seen that kind of consistency in the past. Now, granted, that's only one outing. I didn't get a chance to see Hellickson throw the other day at Scottsdale Stadium against the Giants, but I heard he threw the ball really, really well over there. We saw Kallmeter throw. Yeah. Josh looked outstanding. You know, I haven't really had a chance to really see the bullpen guys yet, and I think that's going to be a big focus because, to me, you know, that's where, you know, it's going to be very important for this club is to have that shutdown bullpen.
And that's where they're a little lean right now due to some, you know, some problems physically.
Well, Addison Reed and Brad Ziegler have both thrown bullpens now. They
Stites,
those guys,
I think, was going to throw today.
Yes, yeah. Stites seems to be a day or two behind, yeah. But it looks like those guys, there's a chance they might squeak just in under the wire and make the opening day roster in terms of being ready health-wise. That would simplify things, certainly. But they have a ton of options back there with some of these young guys.
Now, one thing you worry about with relief pitchers that don't get a full spring training, we know the starters aren't going to be ready to go 7, 8, 9 innings early in the season. You're probably going to have to get in that bullpen on almost a daily basis for the first month of the season. And if you've got some relievers that are a little bit behind schedule, then you get concerned, how often can I pitch? Yeah. Brad Ziegler, how often can we run David Hernandez out there? You know, you may have to pitch him one day, give him 2 days off early in the season, and because of the short starts you would anticipate early in the season, that could become problematic too.
And with that, Candy mentioned Delgado, you know, as well as E3, you think, well, throw him in the rotation, maybe he's more valuable, especially early on in the year, as that long guy, because you're going to need some long guys.
And if he gets a breaking ball, Candy, it's a whole new ball game for Randall Delgado, because that's been his MO so far. Fastball change, and they've just been looking and looking and looking for a breaking ball. Haven't found one yet, but if he can find one, is that a pretty big game changer for him?
I think it is. I watched that game last night on the MLB channel, and he had a very good breaking ball to me, better than I've seen him in the past. He's always kind of struggled with it. You know, sometimes it's got tilt, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it bites, sometimes it just kind of rolls. You know, it just sometimes it's for a strike, sometimes it's not even close. So, but he's always had his changeup that he seems to rely on and spotting the fastball. But now, if you've got two secondary pitches, you know, you can work so much better, and that's a good combination of having a curveball and a slider. How many times did I say last year, oh, there's a curveball yeah. followed by a change, or yeah. a changeup followed by a curve?
Well,
you know, it's like always back, you know.
It was a guy calling.
Goes
yeah.
back to the fingers, right?
Well, and a lot of it was successful until you do it 100,000 times. But, you know, I think for Delgado, when he has outings like that, I think the confidence level boosts up, because, you know, sometimes when you haven't really defined yourself as a major league pitcher yet, you know, your psyche, your confidence isn't quite there. But when you start building that up a little bit with good outings like he had, what do you have, 9 up, 9 down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, strikeouts. Against the Angels, pretty good hitting team. And he, like you said, he punched out Trout, he punched out Pujols. And you know, that kind of stuff boosts your confidence. And you know, we'll see how it goes going forward.
Yeah, and he's out of options. So he's in a good situation. I mean, he's a smart kid. We've all talked to him. He knows that he can make this roster either as a starter or somewhere in the bullpen, whatever. But if he doesn't, somebody's going to have interest if he's having a good spring, and he's having a good spring.
Still a young guy, too,
yeah,
at 25.
He's not that old. Yeah.
The guy that had a rough day the other day at Hohokam, and by the way, they did a beautiful job over there. Have you guys been over there?
No, I haven't. I heard they did.
It's wonderful. It looks brand new. But Vidal Nuno got pounded.
He's had two rough outings.
A home run just against the A's the other day was a home run and four doubles in two innings, and a couple of very hard. Everyone was a rocket. I mean, every ball hit was a rocket. And I think a Delgado and Nuno, if you're going to try and take that quote-unquote extra starter and slide them into that long man spot, it seems like those two guys would be in competition for that long man spot. It seems to be right now. Big edge to Delgado over Nuno, who's had a rough spring.
Well, I think one thing to look at, too, with Nuno is that, you know, he's not an overpowering pitcher, and, you know, he relies a lot on his breaking ball. And early in the spring, you know, guys don't have that good snap on his curveball. So, you know, take a step back when you evaluate him a little bit until he really starts getting his A breaking ball back, and which is very difficult here in Arizona anyway. It's not a good place to really throw a breaking ball compared to Florida. So, you know, let him get a few reps under his belt and then kind of look and see when he gets a better breaking ball, and then kind of judge his performances a little bit.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Candy on that. You know, some guys that aren't overpowering and rely on location to be effective, it takes them a little bit longer to fine-tune that release point and get their mechanics where they need to be, as opposed to a guy like Delgado. When push comes to shove, he can reach back and throw 95, 96. And Nuno doesn't have that luxury. He's got to be on the corners. He's got to be down. He's got to have some movement.
Yeah, I would think if Nuno misses just a hair inside the zone, then we see what happened the other day, right?
Loud contact, yeah.
And a lot of it. Any thoughts on some of the other new guys? What about Robbie Ray? It seems like Robbie Ray had a decent outing here. And from what I read, had some success with a slider. He's another guy that's looked for a breaking ball so far in his development.
He's in the mix.
Yeah, and I watched him throw. He started that game yesterday and watched him throw a little bit. You know, it looked like he was keeping the ball down. He was trying to hit his spots. He doesn't look like an overpowering guy, you know. But so I think when you have a guy like that that, you know, moves his fastball around, tries to keep it down, the changeup, you know, command, and also, you know, the fastball command along with the effectiveness of the off-speed pitches really has to come into play for him. And, again, just like we talked with Nuno, you know, give him a little bit more time to start getting the feel of his breaking ball, you know, getting the feel of his changeup, you know, and then, again, trying to spot the fastball because he's not a guy that's just going to, you know, come up there and hit it if you can, you know, 97, 98 miles an hour.
Yeah, he's been a little erratic this spring with the command. A few too many walks. He walked the leadoff guy a couple of times.
A few other guys that are in the mix, the guys they got from Boston, De La Rosa, who's had a good spring so far. And
yeah.
Then Webster is pitching in the game here against Cincinnati today.
Maybe he might face Will Ferrell at some point, too, who's coming in for that sideshow.
That could be funny.
Might helicopter in here. A couple of news items to pass along, or really I should say scheduling items. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. Buster Olney, who's a GFOP, great friend of the pod, to borrow from the men in Blazers. Buster had a couple of interesting notes in his columns this week about the Diamondbacks. One was from the March 11th column, and he ranked the toughest early season National League schedules, for what it's worth. Of the 15 National League teams, Buster ranked the Diamondbacks with the eighth toughest early season schedule and had this to say. Diamondbacks played 20 of their first 41 against teams that finished over 500 last year. 20 of their first 41 are at home. And he points out, quoting here, the Diamondbacks' young pitching will be challenged early, and they have a chance to announce their presence with authority. Arizona's first 13 games against the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Padres. BB, that's a tricky start out of the gate here.
Well, we talked about it last week. I think every year getting off to a good start is important. Just to start to build some team confidence, find ways to win ball games. But I think this year even more so because we're playing in the division against teams that we figure to be at the top of the division when all is said and done. So for me, this is one of those seasons. If the Diamondbacks would happen to go out and start winning series against the Giants, win a series against the Dodgers, occasionally a team can overachieve and be a lot better than they look on paper. And certainly the possibility is there for the Diamondbacks if they can get off to a fast start, play well against the Giants, Dodgers, get the record to a respectable point before you get into the middle of the season, anything could happen. But it's not going to be easy. You know, the Dodgers are tough. The Giants are tough. Padres are going to be much improved this year. So that first month of the season is going to be really important.
And I think they need to also, you know, learn how to win at home this year. They struggled winning at home last year. And so you got to get that home field advantage back. And, you know, so when you do have those series at home, whether it's against the Giants or the Dodgers, the Rockies, the Padres, whoever, you know, you have a good feeling that you're going to win that series. And I'd like to see them get that back.
I like this, too, from Buster. March 7th, his column. Folks who've seen the Diamondbacks say they have a huge stockpile of power arms and that if two or three among them translate into success this summer, Arizona could play an interesting role in the NL West. Now, that's not saying contender, per se, but it's kind of hinting at it.
Well, I think if you look at the other teams, you know, the Giants now have lost Pence for a while. You know, there's no more Sandoval. You wonder what they're going to do after Bumgarner. You know, the Dodgers, they lost a lot of offense. I think they'll be better up the middle with Rollins and Kendrick. They've got a lot of pitching. The Padres, they sure look good on paper. But, you know, who's going to catch the ball in the outfield? Is that thing going to work? They're going to hit some home runs. We know they can pitch. The Rockies and the Diamondbacks, I think a lot of people look kind of the same way. What are they going to do? So I'm kind of with Beebe. You know, if they win some of these games, I think my gut feeling is if this team could finish 500, I think that's a good year, 81-81.
Okay.
I'm not trying to put numbers on it, but, I mean, if they could go 500, I think that'd be a good year for all the question marks on this team in spring training.
A lot of people are even saying 85 wins is going to get you the second wild card. So, like Gubb said, if you're talking 81-81, you're only four wins away from the second wild card.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
That's an excellent point. And I think the Padres clearly are better, but I think you can make the argument that the division has come back to the Diamondbacks a little bit with the Dodgers and the Giants.
Well, I think this club, in my opinion, I think they can hit the ball with anybody in the division. I really do. I like the offense. I like their ability to be able to score runs. You know, it's the pitching is going to be, you know, what needs to be worked out. And so, but I think when you look at against the Giants, I think this team is better offensively than the Giants. I think with the Dodgers, I think they can hold their own against the Dodgers offensively. The Rockies, you know, I just don't know what to think about the Rockies all the time. They can bang the ball. There's no doubt about it. I just don't know who's going to be healthy and all that other, you know, other stuff. But regardless, I think the Diamondbacks, even if they go into Coors Field, I think they can hold their own offensively against the Rockies. So everything's going to come down to the back of the bullpen, I think, in this team. Starters at least giving a good out and keeping your team in there, and hopefully that back of the bullpen can slam the door, and then you can come out on top.
And that where it ends up with that stockpile of young power arms that Buster wrote about. I want to thank you guys for coming by for the Broadcasters Roundtable. Let's do this every year.
Where's your headphone? You got a stick mic.
We had some equipment problems here.
Yeah, Leo.
Caught Leo by surprise. He's up there with a six-pack of Gubna. That's his problem.
We should all have be so lucky. Yeah, if you heard some rustling early in the show, that was Leo scrambling trying to find a headset for BB that actually functioned.
I got this soup can and a string. I think everything worked
out.
Can
you say hi, Leo?
Yeah, see, now we're not worried about BB hearing me. I could have talked the whole time.
I don't listen to you anyway.
No one else does. Believe me, we're not getting anyone filing complaints about this one.
Well, remember, individual tickets for Diamondbacks regular season games on sale right now. The opener Monday, April 6th against the Giants at Chase Field. You can purchase your tickets at the box office there if you're downtown. Just swing over. They'll hook you up. Or you can, of course, purchase online, dbacks.com/tickets. And also over the phone, 602-514-8400. You can follow the D-backs on Facebook, the Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing. Follow this show on Twitter, D-backs Podcast. You'll get links to all our shows. Leo will tweet out some amusing behind-the-scenes photos that he's taken. And maybe we'll try and find a way to get you some Gubna beer. We got to figure out a way to get that hooked up.
That's in Colorado.
D-backs Podcast brought to you by Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints, Martin Paints at Angel's Paints, and by Matzah's by Streit's. Our thanks to Tom Candiotti and Bob Brenly for the Earl of Grantham, the Gubna Greg Schulte, and Leo Gilmartin. I'm Steve Berthew. We will talk to you next week from spring training games right here in Scottsdale, Arizona. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.